Everyone, thank you for tuning into the Postmodern Realities podcast from the Christian Research Institute and the Christian Research Journal. It's May 2018, and you're listening to episode 71 of Postmodern Realities, and I'm Melanie Cogdill, managing editor of the Christian Research Journal. On this episode, I'm joined by Dr. Richard J. Poupard, who is a medical doctor and a board-certified oral and maxillofacial surgeon practicing in Michigan. He also has an earned MA in Christian apologetics from Biola University, and he's a speaker for the Life Training Institute. In the 2018 Volume 41, Number 2 issue of the Christian Research Journal, Rich has written the cover feature article, and it's called Lying to Ourselves, Why We Cheat. Rich, it's good to have you on.
It's a pleasure to be here, Melanie.
Well, I just want you to describe the story of a dentist named Kip Lupton, and it opens the article. And how does his story, how did that get your interest with regard to the concept of cheating?
Yeah, I ran across a story a few years back in the New Yorker magazine that described this dentist, Kip Lupton. And there's some interesting things about that. He's a dentist actually who practices very close to me, and we have some many things in common. The story was essentially was talking about his interest when he became middle-aged. He began to run and to run marathons. And similar to myself, learning some things about my health, I started running also. He's actually very fast, and he was a good marathoner. He kind of has some good times. And it turns out he also has a son who has cystic fibrosis. And as a means to try to earn money for the treatment of that disease, what he did is he started a website and a series in which he was attempting to run marathons in all 50 states at under 3 hours. Now, if anybody runs marathons, 3 hours is a very, very fast time. It's not quite elite, but it's getting fairly close. So at this point in the story, it's very exciting and in many ways just inspiring for him to do this. But as you kept reading, it turns out that the evidence was showing that Kip was actually cheating in many of these marathons. In many cases, we don't know exactly what he did, but he would either cut part of the course or he'd ride a bike for some of the course. And in one example, he actually made up a race by himself where he was the only one who ran and made up other competitors just in order to post this on his website. This was noticed by a lot of other runners. And the reason why I became interested is the article brought up the fact that it takes so much energy and time and finances for him to fly out to these courses, to sign up for the registration, to get hotel rooms, to get rental cars, and to plan this so that he was able to cheat in order to post a time that he didn't earn. And the question is, why would someone do this? Why would someone take all that time and energy to pretend to run 26.2 miles and to post a time that he actually didn't attain? What does it say about us, or is he very unique in this area? So it got me thinking about this whole concept of cheating. What is it that motivates us or motivates those who do cheat to do so?
Well, that sounds like kind of an extreme case. Although I think I read another one that was similar, like it was a woman who was like, you know, going through different fields and stuff like that when she was running and she wasn't running the course. But so it seems extreme. So is this common in sports that people would cheat like this? And you just mentioned about just thinking about what motivates people to cheat. So what does motivate cheaters?
Well, I was surprised in doing research that in terms of marathons, it's actually far more common than you would think. In fact, there's an entire website devoted to looking at marathon cheaters, looking at different times. It's looking at different stages of the courses and seeing whether individuals who post a fast time are skipping parts of the course. In fact, the Mexico City Marathon this last year, they estimate over 4,000 to 5,000 people cut portions of the course. obviously there's a problem with security there. Surprisingly, this is more common than I would ever think and would ever know. And the question about what motivates cheaters, that's important. I think it's a complex question. We're going to talk about that a little bit later on. But the question, are they motivated by social media? Are they motivated by the fact that they can brag to their friends? Are they motivated because they think they should be achieving more in their running career or sports career than they should? Or are they just simply cheating in order to get the ribbon and getting in first place? I think the surprising answer we're probably going to get to later on was that most of the time, I think what motivates us is that we look at ourselves different than what reality really shows, and we're willing to cheat in order to verify that.
So do you think that cheating really harms families and society? I mean, sometimes I think we think of cheating in big ways, right? If somebody had an affair, some that was married, that would probably damage a family, or some huge financial, you know, scandal. But what about cheating in small ways? Is that a victimless crime? I mean, I think the typical example is, you know, someone who takes home pencils from the office. I mean, who's going to miss, you know, a pencil when you can buy, you know, or a pen when you can buy 10 pens for a dollar? I mean, is it really your office going to miss that one pen that you took home?
It's an excellent question. And the key is, oftentimes what gets publicity is the larger, the cheating in big ways. You got Lance Armstrong, for instance, and bicycle racing, and also in business. You've got Bernie Madoff, or you've got the Enron scandal, in which a few individuals cheated others out of millions and billions of dollars. And that's certainly what we think about. But it turns out cheating occurs in very more commonly in much smaller ways. As you said, most of us, I think, would not feel bad about taking a pen from our office. And there's certainly an extent of this. Was it okay then to take some papers from the office, or maybe like even a ream of paper to use for your copy machine? These are interesting ethical questions. And I think part of it, most of us feel okay with a little bit of cheating. The question of whether is cheating in this small ways a victimless crime, I think there's a couple of different ways of looking at it. Certainly, say, for instance, cheating on our taxes. Most of us, we don't think we cheat on our taxes, but, you know, we kind of fudge a little bit as we get in there. But the IRS does estimate that as being basically billions, if not a $1 trillion problem when we don't do that. So in many ways, small cheating by large numbers of people do have a great impact on our society. And even more from a Christian standpoint, obviously, as a believer in objective moral truth, then cheating is always wrong. They are set rules. Society works by having these set rules that we kind of agree to live by. And sometimes we agree that there's some fudge factor. I'm sure that all of us don't exactly drive under the speed limit every single time. If we drive 5 and over, we kind of, as a society, sort of accept that as okay. But if the goal in life is to try to circumvent as many rules as possible, all of that will result in is chaos. So in that way, even a small cheating, I would argue, is not exactly a victimless crime.
So you're just mentioning those big cheating scandals, you know, with Lance Armstrong or Enron, the Enron debacle, or Bernie Madoff. And so is that the most common type of cheating? I mean, we did mention the, you know, pencils or some of those things that we think of, like, oh, I can, you know, check sports scores during the my time at the office when I should be working or something. Like, people don't feel bad about that. Is it smaller things that are more common, or some of these large stories?
It turns out that we may think that only a few people cheat big, but more commonly, we have a large number of people who just cheat just a little bit and think that's justified. So in that way, I think the most common model is not a small amount of people cheating a lot. It's a large amount of people cheating a little bit. To confirm some of the experiments that we're going to talk about probably in a few minutes that Dan Arley described, showed that to be the case, that when even you'd expect cheating to be large, most of the individuals just cheat a little bit.
So do you think, when you're saying that all of us, you just mentioned that all of us tolerate a little bit of cheating, you know, we just don't think it's that big of a deal. And is this kind of cheating in sports or business or, you know, pencils from the office, is that indication of the character of individuals outside of those venues?
I think it does. It reminds me of a story back. I also followed golf for a while, and there was a lot of stories about Bill Clinton and when he would play golf. He was a serial mulligan taker. He would claim that he shot in the high 80s or low 90s. But reporters who would report on him said that he would just frequently retake a shot when he'd mess one up, which is, once again, actually not an uncommon thing that golfers do, but something that is certainly verboten, not allowed to do in any kind of tournament when you're actually keeping score. So he was telling everybody essentially he was a low 90s golfer, but reporters were reporting that basically there's no way. He definitely shoots much higher than that. And looking at his ethics from that time, I think it's clear that it might be an indication, or might have been an indication, of his ability to bend the rules in other areas. So I do think that if you have a propensity to cheat, especially cheat big in sports or business, that it does reflect your character outside of other venues. I also just recently read a biography on Tiger Woods, and interesting, even after his scandals that he had with his family life, there have been reports of him cheating in golf for a long period of time. Golf's a very honorable game. A lot of times the best golfers will actually call penalties on themselves. And there has been a number of instances in which he would either bend the rules or wasn't forthcoming when confronted with video evidence that he didn't do a correct drop or didn't do something wrong. And once again, I think it's interesting that I think that does show some kind of character that would allow you to, in your own mind, to bend the rules and to cheat outside of other venues at all.
You're listening to the Postmodern Realities Podcast from the Christian Research Institute and the Christian Research Journal. Today's guest is Dr. Richard J. Poupard, who's written a feature article for the 2018 Volume 41, Number 2 issue of the journal, and it's called Lying to Ourselves, Why We Cheat. To read his article, please subscribe to the journal. A 6-issue subscription is now at a new lower price of $33.50, and to subscribe online, please go to our website, equip.org. Well, in your article, you talk about behavioral economists and that they explain this behavior about cheating with a kind of a, you use an acronym, SMORC, which is called the Simple Model of Rational Crime. And so how is that model accurate in predicting human behavior?
Yeah, the SMORC model is interesting, and it seems kind of, it makes sense on its face. When any of us is confronted with an opportunity to cheat or an opportunity to do any form of crime or wrongdoing, that there's this theory states that we sort of do a rational equation in our minds. We balance the benefit of what we would receive by cheating or by doing something wrong. And we then balance that with both the risk of us getting caught doing it, as well as the penalty that we would incur if we were caught. So for instance, if you're taking an exam, clearly if you're tempted to look at your neighbor's test to see what they wrote down, if there's no proctor in the room and you know your institution doesn't even care if you cheat or there's no penalty, then you're pretty much apt to look at your neighbor's test to make sure that you have the right answers. If, on the other hand, you've got some strict proctors that are there that are watching you the whole time and your penalty for cheating would be expulsion, you're less likely to look at that. So on the face of it, it seems like that's actually quite accurate in predicting human behavior. It's also important to note that according to the SMORC theory, the way that you decrease the amount of cheating is to, number one, increase the penalties for cheating, as well as increasing the likelihood that a cheater will get caught. And by doing that, that's really the only way that you can decrease the amount of cheating. And it's a very simple theory. It seems to work most of the time, but I do think it's being questioned now.
So has this theory, the SMORC theory, the simple model of rational crime, has that actually been tested? And if it has, what were the results?
Yeah, well, it's been tested a number of ways, most famously by a research account named Dan Ariely. And what Dan did is he devised a series of experiments that were, I think they're brilliant in their design, actually. He took students and he gave them 20 different math problems. Now, the math problems were not very difficult, but they did take time to to figure, but he only gave them a short amount of time to do the problems. And he broke students into two groups. One group, he simply, they handed in the answers and he graded them and he came up with a, with their average score. Out of 20 problems, their average score was 4. They got 4 of them correctly. He then took a second group of students, and instead of having them hand the paper, he had them shred the paper, or what they thought they were shredding the paper, the test paper, and then self-report what they got. And it was clear that they thought they were shredding the paper, and there was really no chance that they could get caught cheating. So what would happen? You know, according to the simple, according to the SMORC theory, that most people would you know say they got 18 or 20 questions correct. I didn't add they got money for getting correct answers, like $1 for every correct answer. Well, and so it turns out the question was there going to be a few people, most people going to be honest? Were there going to be a few people saying I got 20 right and get more money? It turns out what happened was that almost everybody cheated, but they only cheated a little bit. So very few people in the experimental group that could cheat, for instance, said they got 10 questions right. The average number of questions self-reported correct was 6. And it was pretty much almost universal throughout, mostly, you know, 5 through 7. So instead of what the SMORC theory would predict, where people would cheat a lot, then it turns out that lots of people cheated, but cheated only by a little bit, which was surprising at that point in time to the investigators.
I just want our listeners to know that Dan Ariely has written a book called Honest Truth About Dishonesty, How We Lie to Everyone, Especially Ourselves. And it's on this related topic. And we have that free online at our website. And that was a book that we reviewed back in 2013. Well, in your article, you talk about how everyone has a personal fudge factor when they're cheating just a little to gain something. So what's a personal fudge factor?
Yeah, the theory that Ariely posed, and I think has a lot of merit, is that, you know, why is it that so many people felt free to cheat, but only free to cheat a little bit? And what he posed is that we all live by what he calls a personal fudge factor. In other words, we want to think that we are honest and we want to feel good about ourselves. If we, for instance, had the opportunity to cheat and we doubled the score, for instance, and cheated the folks out of, you know, $8 to $10, well, that wouldn't make us feel good about ourselves. We would see ourselves as a cheater. Instead, we cheat, but just a little bit. So by only adding an extra dollar or two, you know, kind of justifying it, well, maybe I was a little slow today. I almost had that one right. We were able to not only get a small benefit from cheating, in this case, a couple dollars, but we could also feel good about the way that we are. We can essentially cheat ourselves into thinking that we are very honest. At the same time, we're sort of just kind of fudging a little bit. And that's in he repeated these experiments with a lot of different variables. For instance, he'd give $10 for every correct question. And you would assume, of course, that more people would cheat or they'd cheat more. Nope, the same amount. In fact, as he increased the amount of money, then he found the cheating slightly decreased a little bit because people want to feel good about themselves. So it's okay to cheat a little bit, but not as much as you would otherwise predict.
So what are some insights that Christians can glean from the conclusions of Dan Ariely's experiments?
Well, I think that one of the biggest conclusions that we can come with is the fact that we tend to look at people who cheat as those out there. We tend to think that we don't cheat. We tend to think that we are, as Christians, that we, as we look at our behavior, as we look and we tend to resist temptation, that it's okay if we that we don't think that we really have that issue with temptation. But it turns out that even in Dan's experiments, that the religious background of the students didn't matter, that self-reported Christians cheated just as much as those who didn't report any religious background at all. So I think it's important to see that all of us as human beings have a propensity to deceive ourselves. And we've got to be very careful when we evaluate our behavior and evaluate what we're doing to see, is this a personal fudge factor that I'm living by? You know, what type of breaking the rules am I comfortable with? Where does that lie? Because when given a chance to, you know, whether it's doing our taxes or whether it's living by the civil laws that we're governed by, we might think that we're doing a great job. We might think that we are doing a good job resisting sin, but we may be deceiving ourselves in that being that fudge factor, that we're not doing nearly as well as how we think we're doing.
I think one thing that people do all the time, and I guess we justify, is just various different traffic laws, right? We don't come to a complete stop, or we speed, or there's a reason why we have to go above the speed limit because we're running late or whatever it is. So that's kind of easy to see in a lot of examples. You also talk about something called irrational cheating. And I want to know what motivates people to irrationally cheat.
Yeah, this I found this very, very interesting, because even with Dan Ariely's experiments, that there is some gain, some material gain to cheating. You cheat in order to get something. But there's a lot of examples. And the example of Kip Luton in the beginning of the story was a prime one. But there's actually even more, in which people spend, instead of actually cheating to get money or to get something, that people actually spend money and spend resources in order to cheat to really no ends. And that's, I call it irrational cheating. One example, just as a strange example, is in the world of online gaming, in which most people are anonymous. And there is an entire economy based on having someone play these games for you in order to, these games you play against others, and you have got a certain kind of rating or ranking when you compare yourself to others. And it's all done anonymously. But people will actually pay others to play for them in order to artificially boost their ranking. And it doesn't seem to make any sense at all. I mean, obviously, you're paying to play the game. You're also paying someone in order to elevate your ranking. And the ranking is, nobody really knows it anyways. So why would anybody ever do this? But yet, this is quite common. And the answer appears to be, you know, to me, there's two possible reasons why. The first reason is people like to brag and put it on social media and have themselves feel good because other people can see them and say, wow, they're really good at that game. But even then, like I said, most of these are done anonymously anyways. I think the real reason is that we like to think that we are better than we actually are. And we're actually willing to not only suspend reality and judgment in terms of deceiving ourselves, but we're willing to cheat in order to support that deception that we have based on our abilities. You know, just using another golfing example. I think I'm a golfer. I'm a 90. I should be shooting 90. That's how good I think I am. Now, unfortunately, my scorecard shows 100, and all my scorecards show 100, but I just really think I'm a 90s golfer despite the fact that I can't shoot that well. So I'm actually willing to cheat in order to convince not others that I'm a 90s golfer, but literally to convince myself that I'm that good. And that's a very different way of thinking about how we cheat. We cheat not just to gain financial or material goods. We cheat not only to gain fame or have other people look at us more positively, that I believe that we cheat in order to deceive ourselves. We cheat in order to convince ourselves that we are better at something than we actually are, or that we are in many ways more moral than we actually are, or that we've achieved more than we actually have. And that's a very strange way, I think, of looking at that. But I think that is actually the core, or the in-depth reason why a lot of this cheating goes on.
That's interesting that you bring up just ways that cheating can be done in terms of technology. And I also think of like people who can use different programs where you can buy Instagram followers. So it just looks like you're more popular than you are. And it's just really common these days that people just, I guess, want to appear that feel good about themselves, right? Because they're just cheating in small ways and they're not, I guess they're thinking that they're not hurting anyone is usually how the argument goes. So when we are cheating and everyone's cheating at some level, according to obviously we know as Christians because we're sinners, but also just in this research that's been done with the SMORC theory, who are we actually deceiving when we cheat, whether it's in big ways or tiny little ways that we think won't hurt anyone?
Yeah, well, certainly as Christians, we know who exactly that we're not deceiving. We're definitely not deceiving God. He knows exactly what our behavior is and what our heart is when we do this behavior. So the idea that we think we can fool God by just a little bit of cheating is clearly not correct. Obviously, in many ways, we think we're deceiving others. We think that, for just the example that you use, Melanie, the girl who has bought more Instagram followers, that like when people click on her, whoa, look at that. She's a lot more popular than she really is. And that might be true a little bit, but to be honest with you, even that, I don't know about you, but when I click on someone, even when my kids click on something, you know, the idea of how many followers they have just is not that big of a deal. And who does think that's a big deal? Well, usually it's ourselves. Who we are deceiving when we do things like, for instance, get more followers than we really know, or post an achievement that we haven't really gained, or have someone else do our exam for us, or have someone play our game for us, then we're actually deceiving ourselves. We think that we are able to achieve these things, and instead of facing reality and facing the truth of both our behavior as well as the things that we've accomplished, we would rather twist reality and deceive ourselves and cheat in order to maintain that facade. And I think the challenges that we have as we learn about why people cheat is looking at our own lives and saying, what are the ways in which I could be deceiving myself into thinking that I'm in my own life in terms of the things that I've achieved or the things that I want, or which ways are we to? It's a little bit scary and off-putting to think that as humans, we have this propensity, we have this ability to do this so easily. And it's not something which is rare, it's something which is almost universal. And to understand that and to think that not as, you know, a way to look at cheating that others are doing, but ways in which we are cheating ourselves and deceiving ourselves into to thinking that we are someone that we actually are not.
Well, this has been an interesting conversation, I think, for a lot of self-reflection for all of us. Well, finally, I want to end with some fun rapid-fire questions for Rich. So, Rich, pancakes or waffles?
Pancakes with real maple syrup.
Okay. Are you an early bird or a night owl?
I'm more of an early bird.
Call or text?
Call. I'm old, so.
Introvert or extrovert?
Definitely introvert.
And what's something that you learned in the past week? It can be informational or something you learned personal growth-wise.
I began to play a number of board games, and I had to read the rules and learn how to play those guys. So I would say that from the last week or so.
Well, thanks, Rich, for being a guest on the Postmodern Realities podcast.
Thank you so much, Melanie.
Today's guest, Dr. Richard J. Poupart, has written our feature cover article for the 2018 Volume 41, Number 2 issue of the Christian Research Journal, and his article is called Lying to Ourselves, Why We Cheat. A 6-issue subscription is now at a new lower price of $33.50, and to subscribe online, please visit equip.org. We'd like to hear from you, so connect with us on social media. Like the Bible Answer Man Facebook page and follow CRI, Christian Research Journal, Hank Hanegraaff, and the Bible Answer Man on Twitter. Follow the Bible Answer Man on Instagram and please subscribe to the Bible Answer Man channel on YouTube. If you like this episode, please subscribe to the Postmodern Realities podcast on iTunes and rate and review our podcast. When you rate and review our podcast, it helps others find our content. And please share this episode on your social media accounts. Be sure you tune in daily to the Bible Answer Man broadcast, hosted by CRI President Hank Hanegraaff, who answers your questions live on air. To ask Hank a question, call 888-ASK-HANK, Monday through Friday at 6 p.m. Eastern Time. Hank is also live streaming each week on Facebook and YouTube, so check equip.org for dates and times. In addition, head to iTunes and subscribe to Hank Unplugged, Hank's new audio podcast. Follow Hank off the grid, where he has in-depth conversations with some of the brightest minds discussing topics you care about. So until our next Christian Research Journal author conversation, thanks for listening to the Postmodern Realities Podcast.